Coming up on AI Having a Clue.
Get out of my pub.
That's not bad. OpenAI have bought a podcast.
A school in the Yorkshire Dales called Wensleydale School. I was like, that's not a real thing.
That's a hallucination. Things get soapy. Come hang out with us and we're talking on a real level. You know, leave the Zuck in Silicon Valley and bring Mark to this podcast.
Wow. And a fruity question from you.
And all this fruity slop on socials. Sounds wrong, that, doesn't it? Hello, welcome to AI Having a Clue, the podcast where we unpack the wild world of AI. I am tech novice George Butler.
And me, James Chandler, esperto di tecnologia, tech expert in
Did you ask ChatGPT to recognise that language?
Yeah, I thought it was Manx, so I just did it myself.
Welcome all. This is the show that many people are actually comparing to Amazon Prime's Last One Laughing.
Are they?
They are. It's because, James, it's full of brilliant guests. Mm-hmm. They've got Alan Carr and Diane Morgan, but we have Karen Howe and Phil Rowley. Both shows are co-hosted by a Jimmy.
No one calls me Jimmy.
Jimmy Chandler, but mainly because, like in Last One Laughing, no one ever laughs at my jokes.
There should be a laughter track or something that we put on that just to make him feel.
It's not a competition, guys. You can laugh.
No, it's good. Yeah, it's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, let's move on, because on this week, we've got some news from the world of AI. We've already teased OpenAI have bought a podcast.
They didn't call. I missed their call. Oh, maybe something in the inbox.
Check the junk.
That would be a bad one to miss,
wouldn't it? It's a bit like the Crystal Palace UEFA one. Do you remember that one?
No.
They missed an email from UEFA, and because of that, they got kicked out of qualification for the Europa League.
They missed an email
because it went to like the info@CrystalPalace email address.
We should check info at gmail.com.
We should. Yes. But we check it every week for list of questions, of course. We've got one of those on the way. James's big thing coming too. It is all go. And how has your week in AI been, James?
Quite chocolatey. Not much AI going on, I must admit. We did a Easter egg hunt, which is an annual tradition with my in-laws. I came fifth. Beaten by some children. You've got to sort of let them win.
I have the note here.
You had your Alexa Plus. How's that been going?
Yes. Well, if you've been listening to the podcast, we've been talking about this new upgrade available to the Amazon Echo device. Alexa Plus is the upgraded version. Alexa, obviously quite old technology now, and I've been talking about how frustrated I've become with Alexa, old Alexa, being absolutely useless, not knowing the answers to things, like barely even being able to play music, struggling to recognize like the things I'm asking for. I was getting very fed up with it. New Alexa came. I think because I'm a Prime member, they offered it to me.
Yes.
Snapped it up straight away.
They've got you on the trial.
They've got me on. I don't know.
I listened to some emails.
I was as surprised as you were, right? Because we talked about it like last week that you had to have a new device.
Martin Kemp.
So I don't have a brand new device. I've got a newish device, but it asked me, would I like it on all my devices? Just randomly. Then I didn't go to it. It came to me and I said, yes, of course. And I tell you what, it's a lot better.
Is it?
It's a lot better. I know what Martin Kemp, listener, Martin Kemp is on about. Its tone is a bit smarmy. It's a bit like, it's trying too hard to please. Right. Like, it's like, you wake up in the morning and you'll be like, what's the weather outside? It's a beautiful day today. Okay. And it's a glorious sunny 9 degrees. It's like, chill out.
Rain it in
a little bit. It's that kind of classic LLM where it's a bit keen
to
impress
you. What are you using it for then? More than weather, surely.
You're
putting it through its paces.
Well, I've asked it a couple of questions. So I did a trial. So I asked it a question on the old device. It did not know the answer. Asked it on the new device, got it straight away. And I recorded it. Take a listen to this. Oh.
Alexa, I'm looking for a really nice restaurant to eat out in Silicon Valley with my friend, the Zuck. Have you got any ideas of where I should eat?
I'm not quite sure how to help you with that.
Alexa, I'm planning an evening out with my friend Mark the Zuck Zuckerberg in Silicon Valley. Have you got any suggestions for a good place to go?
For an evening out in Silicon Valley, I'd recommend Eataly Silicon Valley, Terra in Santa Clara, which has a 4.2 star rating on OpenTable and serves excellent Italian cuisine until 10:30 p.m. tonight. Yard House on Santana Row is another brilliant option with American fare and a great bar atmosphere, staying open until midnight.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not a complicated question to tackle, but the old device couldn't hack it, the new device can. It's just a little bit better, I think.
Are they in the race, though, with, you know, you've got Apple and Gemini coming, that's going to get better with AirPods, you've got Sesame, you've
I mean, it feels a mile away, better, yeah. But a mile away still from, you know, what you might get with ChatGPT, Claude or Gemini. It's not at that level yet. Could you ask it to create you and read you a bedtime story based on two attractive podcast hosts who do a tech series? No.
No.
That's too out of the world. That's too out of anyone's remit, isn't it? But it's better. So I'm assuming they're going to keep developing it, keep improving it.
Yeah, and you're in the pilot, so, you know, it should get better.
Yeah, so I will keep you updated on that.
Oh, nice.
Now, it's been a week. It's been a week since we AI maxed. We were AI maxing last week, weren't we, guys?
What's AI maxing?
Well, you know, Gen Z talk. We were AI maxing.
That's what it's the maxing thing. Yeah. Okay.
And we were AI maxing last week because I got Gen Z to explain large language models.
Yeah, I mean, that was all
less
right.
AI, more slay AI.
Yeah, that was all right.
It's giving. So we spoke to that younger generation. I mean, before we did Gen Z explains AI, we had Shakespeare explains AI. But you, I mean, do you want more Shakespeare?
No, I remember it.
You're happy done. We're done with Shakespeare?
Yeah.
And you feel like we don't need to speak to the younger generation again? You're happy with Gen Z?
I mean, who else is out there? Shakespeare fans and young people.
I'll tell you who else is out there, James.
Oh, God.
Soap viewers. Viewers of popular soap operas, broadcast on traditional linear television every single night, also available on catch-up. Soap viewers are a different kind of audience.
Right.
And I think it's time that we communicate AI to these groups of people who maybe don't quite understand it yet.
Right.
And that's why, cue the music, this is EastEnders Explains AI, Data Center Edition. I didn't just come here for a cuppa, all right? I came because you deserve the truth. Oh, here we go. What now? Another secret? Another betrayal? It's worse. It's about data centres. Don't you dare, not today. They're everywhere. Big buildings full of machines. Rows and rows of servers, yeah? Like the brains behind the internet. What? Like computers? More than just computers. There are thousands of them storing your photos, your messages, your dodgy late-night searches, all of it. You ain't my mother, but go on. They work by constantly processing and sending data. You click something on your phone, bang, it travels to a data centre. Those servers find what you need, then send it back in seconds. Emails, Netflix, socials, it's all running through them. So you're telling me my whole life is sitting in some warehouse? They've got cooling systems, backup power. If one goes down, chaos, absolute chaos. I knew it. I knew something was off. Truth is, without data centres, none of this works. No internet, no drama, nothing. Get out of my pub.
It's okay. I'll give him that. I'm going to give him that. That's not bad. That's a great sort of Phil Mitchell, Frank Butcher hybrid. That wasn't bad.
Well, it's as I said, it's time we connect with the soap viewer.
Yeah.
And hopefully I broke data centers down for them in a way they understand.
Do you think at any point the Venn diagrams just start to meet in the middle? Sort of Shakespeare, Gen Z, soap viewers?
I can assure you that Shakespeare lovers, EastEnders viewers, and Gen Z at no point cross. We're good on that one.
Would have been nice to have a mention of Wellard.
Wellard.
It would have been nice to get that. But apart from that, I'd say, you know, yeah, 4 out of 10.
Hey.
Yeah, not bad.
Wellard could always come back.
He could
next time rounds.
Yes, look out for that one.
Okay.
Goodness me. Any news this week in AI?
Pop off AI. Time now to dig into the latest news. It's not the biggest story in AI this week, but I think it's quite interesting to us. So let's talk about the fact. OpenAI have bought a tech podcast.
Yeah, TBPN, which is a popular tech podcast. When you sort of redefine what a podcast is, it's sort of a video talk show. It probably gets about 100,000 viewers/listeners.
It's very Silicon Valley targeted, this
one. Very,
right?
Very Silicon Valley. It's got some ad revenue. That's going to get bigger. We're sort of double guessing as to why OpenAI have bought it. I mean, it's not like Bezos buying the Washington Post. It's not like Elon buying Twitter. I mean, it's fairly small fry compared to both of those.
So Sam Altman this week, he's come out, and there's a few more stories. He's been chatty this week, to say the least. And he has said in the week that AI has a marketing problem. Mm. So there is one, you know, argument that this is kind of an addressing of the fact that he kind of thinks AI's got this issue with how it's perceived. And perhaps he can sort of own a narrative through this quite popular podcast. But it does strike me that this series is very, as we've just said, it's very tech, very techy, very, very techy, very Silicon Valley coded. And I'm pretty sure people that listen to this show will get AI. And I don't necessarily think the marketing problem relates to the audience of this podcast.
Yeah, bang on. Strategically, it's a bit mucky. Like, it's these sort of multiple hour video podcasts are big in Silicon Valley, and it's, you're bang on, tech people talking to tech people. That's the audience. Everyone kind of knows AI, who's within it. The people who aren't listening to it are sort of new brands, the people you want to spend money on advertising, or new audiences that want to know about AI. They probably listen to better podcasts about AI, quite frankly. So I don't know.
No, any.
It doesn't fit the what he's been saying around AI's got a marketing problem. This is just going to be some echo chamber that's just going to keep talking. It's a vanity thing for him that he probably just wanted to buy. He's on record of saying he likes the podcast, and it means he can go on for 3 hours and wang on about OpenAI as a sort of propagandary type thing.
It's like a birthday present. It's like how billionaires buy themselves a football club. He's bought himself a podcast. But there is a trend at the moment with these multi-billionaires buying these massive media organisations. Warner Brothers, obviously ongoing at the moment. Universal Music, fresh bid in again. And there's just obviously
Snoop buying Swansea City. You know?
Yes.
So
yeah, well, similar.
What could he have got for the money? That could have been the other thing. What's he paying for this?
Well, he could have. How much did he? How much did he?
Low hundreds of millions is the guess
of how much he's paid for this podcast.
Well, chump change.
He could probably, for a similar amount of money, bought an equally great AI podcast.
I wouldn't sell it for that.
Well, I'll take half the money and you can stay up and co-host it with Sam Altman. Sam, I'll tell you what, Sam's, as I said, he's been chatty this week. OpenAI have kind of put out this new publication. They've kind of basically said the world needs to, you know, rip up where we're currently at and start afresh with like a new world order, which includes a 4-day working week and like new economic and policy ideas. What's happening?
He said that AI superintelligence, which is this North Star they're all aiming for.
Remind us what superintelligent means?
Superintelligence is sort of the top of the AI pyramid. This is effectively, you know, machines being able to do everything that humans can do and better and kind of do it of their own accord. This is everything they're kind of aiming for. He's saying that AI superintelligence is so big that we're going to need in inverted commas, new deal. The new deal for the uninitiated, of course, was the series of US programs and financial reforms that President Roosevelt came up with in order to combat the Great Depression. So he's sort of saying we need this massive overhaul, policy, economics. It feels like, and it's sort of odd that the person who's in charge of this is the one saying it. It feels like, again, he's kind of creating his own hype on this. He's talking about government intervention. He's talking about the need for more regulation, which he's probably not wrong on. He wants innovation to track at the same rate as innovation, so one doesn't outpace the other. We've talked about that lots on here. And he's also talking about things like jobs. He's talking about sort of the economics of it all. So I think all these things are kind of well placed, but it's sort of, you know, the guy who's in charge of it calling for something like the New Deal, I just think is a little bit odd. It's like, how seriously we're going to take this?
And there's kind of parallels turning back to last week's episode when we found out all about Muskism, some of the stuff that he's asking 100%. For and looking for. I mean, it's quite an interesting time for these tech giants at the moment because they're literally laying off a huge percentage, kind of thousands of people in this kind of tech world that have what you would, you know, deem as these great jobs. a lot of them are being made redundant at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Job eliminations, I think, is the favourite not-so-warm term for it. The other thing to say on Sam Altman, he has been he's been in the news this week. There's a piece in The New Yorker, which is an extensive piece all about him, basically asking the question is, can someone like Sam Altman be trusted to run AI? And it looks at a bunch of internal documents, interviews. It talks about when we got into it with Jack Benjamin in the Elon and Sam story, that board coup in 2023. And effectively, it calls him a liar. It's a bit of a hit piece on him. It's saying he's not been consistently honest with the board. It's saying that he's misrepresented lots of the safety features with OpenAI. And it goes further to say that he says one thing publicly and then operates entirely different internally. So, you know, I think in that, when we looked at those two pieces between him and Elon, kind of looked more like the kind of the good guy, the kind of sensible head. This New Yorker piece is calling that into question massively. So yeah, big week for Sam Altman.
Let's stay with the kind of the AI wars, as we like to dub them. There's a lot of rumblings at the moment about OpenAI being IPO'd, being kind of made into a public traded company.
Yeah.
Well, we know that Sam's frenemy or arch nemesis, however you want to deem it, is set to be publicly listing his biggest asset. Musk is... Well, tell us, James. Musk and SpaceX, which is where XAI sits. Well, that is potentially going to be the world's biggest business.
Yeah, $1 trillion. Keen listeners would have heard us talk about this with the authors of Muskism on last week's episode. SpaceX has confidentially filed for an IPO, which means it's going to go public. This could happen as soon as June. The company could be valued at over $1 trillion. That would make Elon, obviously, the world's first trillionaire, which we've talked about a lot.
Is Tesla being folded into this?
I think it's all going to be one company, and I think this is what the guys were saying last week. There's this complete merging of what looks like lots of disparate businesses coming under one umbrella. And then, you know, effectively, if you've got a company as big as this worth $1 trillion, that's the thing that's propping up things like pension funds. So it becomes absolutely critical that it does well to pay out on all of these things. So for all of the criticism, I think, of Elon, and lots of it founded, I mean, to get a business that's going to be the most valuable one in the world really is quite incredible. Lots of space news this week as well,
yeah,
we should say, of which SpaceX aren't involved. So no doubt he'll be sat there either trying to change the narrative on X or not really talking about it, because I'm sure he'd have liked some of his rockets going up into the sky.
It's interesting though. So they're all quite different, whether it's AI, whether it's automobiles and Tesla, like all coming together, sitting under one business. It's a very disparate kind of diverse company. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that all plays out. And obviously Tesla currently is a publicly listed stock, so I don't know how that then folds into the mix, but
get an expert on.
Yeah,
or we should ask AI, you know.
We should ask Grok.
In terms of how this is going to play out though, a big win for one Elon Musk, I would think, my friend.
Yes, I would imagine so. Well, I was going to say let's stay on the AI wars, but actually a rare moment of unity and peace has broken out because Anthropic, OpenAI and Google, they're coming together.
They are a bit of collaboration here. All still fierce rivals, we should say. That AI war is not dimming at all, but they have started coordinating with one specific issue in mind, and that is China. And really around model theft and copying. They formed a joint working group and they're going to talk to different governments together rather than trying to go it alone. So they're not building things together. What they're trying to do is really protect exactly what they've built. One stat that's doing the round, 16 million interactions allegedly used to copy Anthropic's Claude by the Chinese, they think. So these are attacks that are coming in. Some people say some of that code was leaked inadvertently, but these companies are all kind of under attack. Stuff is basically being nicked. There is some irony in that because...
I was going to say, whenever I hear a story like this, you can't not but laugh, because that's how they built their models.
The US and all of these companies are kind of framing China, saying that if there's one strategic threat out there, we don't actually think it's regulation. It's actually China. So yeah, the sort of bottom line is they are coming together, but it's on this very one specific issue. They're still competing like hell. And really, it's about defending what they've got. It's not really true collaboration. They're not coming together to kind of build something something new that's for the benefit of everyone. They're just kind of defending themselves against a common enemy, which is China.
Interesting. And we're going to just stay on China right now because I want to talk about lobsters. When I hear lobsters, I think about surf and turf. I think about delicious rolls with tasty butter sauces. But over in China, Open Claw is sweeping the nation and it's nicknamed Lobster. That's what the Chinese were calling it. It's this new open source AI assistant that apparently, James, is a next level innovation.
Yeah, it's filling gaps where tools that we have, things like ChatGPT, are basically inaccessible. The Chinese government, as we know, are very, very active supporters of AI adoption. They incentivize people. There's a bunch of subsidies, things like that. So if you're an entrepreneur and you're an AI, you can actually get money from the government to do it, which is why I think they are pacing so far ahead. People that are using it, people that manage e-commerce shops, e-com is obviously absolutely massive. It's on a different level in China. If you're investing in stocks, if you're doing any sort of multitasking, these are the types of people that are embracing Open Claw or the lobster, as you said, they're calling it. The Chinese government thinks there's some bigger issues that it can take on as well. Things like unemployment, particularly youth unemployment. It basically empowers and gives people sort of their own business, their own agents where they can start to run stuff. So in a way, it's this sort of amazing tool that's going to enable to do things that they've never been able to do before.
Is this the sort of thing we've kind of been talking about being on the horizon here, where we all have like our own AI personal assistants who do stuff for us? Or is this something different?
No, bang on. This is all of the sort of the second brain stuff, different agents doing different things. You could have a team of agents working on strategy, maybe one doing marketing, others doing sort of more task-based productivity things. I mean, this is a reality now. I mean here, but it feels like it's pacing even further ahead in China.
Watch out for a lobster arrival in the UK sometime soon, maybe.
Get your lobsters out.
Get lobsters out. We play a game on this show, and we play a game called ChatGPT Roulette.
Yes.
Quick one now. What's the last thing you asked your LLM of choice, James Chandler?
Do you know the player Camavinga?
No.
He is a Real Madrid player. I was asking it for puns to do with fingers. It's too complicated.
Okay.
Very poor.
I asked ChatGPT for a recipe for some barbecue ribs.
You're always doing recipes.
It is always recipes. And I asked it for the schedule for a Broadway musical. Jazz hands.
Okay, there's a lot of cooking going on. We're not seeing a lot of that here, though.
Well, I always notice, James, whenever we play this game, it's always quite boring stuff, right? It's always quite mundane, run-of-the-mill stuff. It's all stuff that a year or two or three ago, we would have searched into Google. And yeah. I think we are seeing everybody that kind of is starting to use, large language models, that it's basically the new way of searching for things in a lot of cases. Some would argue terrible for the environment, but it is the way. And because of that, businesses are scrambling to be noticed by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, absolutely. And GEO, as we've been calling it in the industry, generative engine optimization, not search engine optimization. We were talking about it a long time in this industry, has kind of gone mainstream.
GEO.
Yeah, generative engine optimization. Wow. Also, some people saying answer engine optimization. So all of the acronyms for you. Yeah, it feels like it's gone mainstream. I think when it's being written about in the BBC, which they have covered, you kind of know that it's creeping into public consciousness. It's no surprise that lots and lots of publishers, media owners, people that host sites have seen a massive reduction in website traffic because people aren't leaving that search page anymore. We've been brought up on a model whereby you have what we used to call search engine optimization that would crawl your site, pick the most relevant bits, and then whisk you off to a website. Of course, all of that is now happening within the browser, within the LLM of your choice. So there's new strategies that people are having to employ to make sure that your content is being used to train these LLMs. And when you are searching for something that is relevant, it's being surfaced. And that's why players like Reddit are suddenly coming to the fore now. And if you want to ask a question about running super shoes, then...
No one wants to ask.
there is brilliant content on Reddit that's written by humans, that's very, very detailed, that gets right down the rabbit hole. And the LLMs are sensing that as more reliable information than perhaps something traditionally where it might have taken you to Runner's World or something like that. So big, big change.
Big change. Interesting. And we always talk about the impact that advertising is going to have on that as well, which is, it's very pertinent. Okay, final news story for this week. It's all about schools and teachers. We are fast approaching exam season, where usually teachers get very busy. They're often having to mark a lot of papers and get students prepared and ready. Perhaps not for much longer will teachers be having to do that.
I had to second guess this. A school in the Yorkshire Dales called Wensleydale School. I was like, that's not a real thing.
That's a hallucination from
AI.
It
is a real thing. I literally thought this was a story written by AI and this is going to be some sort of cruel game that you play where I talk about this story and then you reveal that it's been said. It is a real place in Leyburn, DL9 Darlington postcode for those in the know. Wensleydale School is trialling AI to mark mock exams, mainly with stuff that's kind of essay-based. So obviously things like history, things like English.
Stuff which obviously previously you wouldn't have ever dreamed, you know, maths equations, quite easy to do.
Exactly.
Essays and arguments and that, I mean, that's a, how on earth you kind of could trust an AI to do that, one would question, but well, they do.
Well, they, it is faster, it's more detailed, they're saying, and potentially less biased as well. Like, AI isn't going to get tired when they're marking their 40th paper at 2 a.m. in the morning. Teachers are still marking it alongside with that oversight to make sure that it's accurate, to make sure that there is quality. The trial has increased workload in the short term and comes with costs. It's thought to be around 45 pence per answer.
Wait, 45 pence every time AI marks an exam script?
Yeah.
Why? That's crazy.
You know, there's a bit of compute going on. There's some data center that needs paying for. You know, these things, you know, no such thing as a free lunch, my friend. Even though it's going to save some time in the future, that's what's happening. Teachers and leaders are being very careful about how they're talking about this. It's being framed as a support tool rather than a replacement. And the thought is that it can actually help standardise. Like if you had three different teachers, they might all mark it, especially something like English, which could be a little more subjective than, say, maths, which is very objective, could mark it in a different way. This is going to standardise those things.
There's a huge issue here.
What's... I think this is all right.
No, there's a huge issue.
What's the issue?
Like, what on earth are teachers going to be able to talk about? Because they love talking about how much work they've got on. They love talking about how they got to mark until, like, late hours. What are they going to talk about when that doesn't happen anymore?
Teacher listeners literally throwing their Amazon Alexa across the kitchen.
Teachers, I'm joking. I love you. I'm sorry. joking aside, I do see a bit of an issue. Like, because the way that we write is very different, unique. It's part of our creativity. And there is probably a correct way to write in the sense that, you know, grammar's on point, the structure of your argument, you know, PEA, wasn't it? Point evidence analysis at school. They used to say that. And I'm sure there is a formula to getting that right.
Yeah.
But it's also a place where people can, you know, students can add humour or add wit or add interesting points and write in a way that's persuasive that doesn't necessarily follow a formula. Now, that writing might be some of the best writing and some of the best essays that you can create, yet AI will probably not like them. And there is a big issue there. And I think there is a lot of talk about how at school you were kind of, your creativity is pigeonholed and you're taught, you know, there is one way of thinking. And this is almost following that pattern even more and really kind of putting an emphasis on following a structure in a way. And I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It maybe doesn't reward sort of out-the-box thinking or bravery so much. It's more kind of conformity. Of course, we know AI loves patterns, so great at patterns. But yeah, I think there's maybe a point there in it being brave. The other slightly dystopian thing you've got, which is what a lot of HR professionals are finding. I was talking to someone who works in HR last week. They are using AI to screen CVs, most of which are written by AI. So you've got AI sort of looking at, and it's this very odd thing going on where no one's really winning. And I just wonder if you're going to get into this as well. Essays that are sort of, you know, 95% written by AI, and then the AI is kind of marking it, just feels like this slightly odd doom loop. And God, I'm beginning to sound like you. I'm going to just stop talking.
You,
what's
well, listen,
happened? I should be wearing off on you.
It's important. Oh. We have to look at these things and not embrace them just because they're easy. It's always simple to do the path of least resistance. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing to do.
There's a point in there somewhere.
Did you listening get fooled by our April Fool's Day prank on Instagram? Did we get you? Did we get you, James?
Did get me. Yeah.
Did you think we booked Mark the Zuckerberg?
Well,
for this show?
is your sort of life motto that you're going to get him one day?
I honestly think Mark, if you are listening,
oh, it's Mark now. Oh, got
well,
it.
I'm addressing him directly,
right?
And then Mark, if you are listening, I think you should come on because I think we could, you know, I know you love to go on Rogan and I know you love to, you know, to chat with the tech bros, but come hang out with us and we're talking on a real level, you know, leave the Zuck in Silicon Valley and bring Mark to this podcast.
Wow.
That's my pitch to Mark the Zuck Zuckerberg.
My pitch is other people are buying AI podcasts, so come on in. Yeah, it was good.
Well, you know, like you said, I wouldn't sell this podcast for anything unless it's got six figures in it.
Shameless.
talking of plugs, just a quick one. Patreon is where you can go to support this podcast. If you are not a billionaire and you don't want to buy us out for millions of pounds, you can go to Patreon and join the AI Haven't a Clue Club. Lots of perks, lots of benefits, and we would love to have you as part of the gang. You can just search AI Haven't a Clue Patreon and click to sign up. I should also just say, if you fancy keeping up with the news from the world of AI, our free Substack is available as well.
Substack!
Enough plugging. Mm. Time now to talk about your big thing this week.
Yeah, my big thing this week is Replit.
What is Replit?
Well, we know we talk about lots about the democratization of creativity. You know, the idea that anyone could be a photographer or a writer or, you know, whatever it might be, film director. Replit sort of takes it to the next level. It allows you to create apps, create websites. And of course, it's not just the design and the publishing, but all the kind of the coding that goes in as well, all from a prompt. So I was playing with it. Someone suggested I have a play with it. I mean, it's incredible. In 10 minutes after, you know, a sort of a fairly detailed prompt, I was able to create a companion app for the show.
What?
It's got a little dummy data in, but it's got, you know, you can search all of the big things. You can search for the guests. It's got...
And then can you go in and edit it yourself and change the copy?
On the fly. But you don't need knowledge of being able to...
Code
anything like that. You're just prompting it all the time. You know, make this bigger. You know, look at this thing. Make it look like this.
Wow.
I mean, I've knocked something together in 10 minutes for the show. But you look at other examples. The one that they use is someone who is creating like a healthy eating app on their phone. They're using the phone camera to take a picture of their plate of food. It then understands all the various macros, protein, whatever, and then starts a leaderboard amongst friends of who's eating how well. They give rewards, that sort of stuff. Like, you know, you'd have to download this from the App Store before and it might cost you $5.99 a month. You can just create this thing now. And most of what you can do is on the free version as well. Replit. I highly recommend getting to grips with it. Pretty incredible.
That's really interesting. I'll have a play with it this week. If anyone listening has used it or fancies giving it a go, then do let us know how you get on, please. I will just quickly say last week that your big thing, and I'll give you a little bit of self-congratulations here, because your big thing last week was from a TikTok creator who was basically conning ChatGPT. It was getting it to come up with some absolutely ridiculous nonsense. It was asking it things like, oh, what do you think of my new jacket, chat? And like, what it was on his face, wasn't it? Not even in shot. And then of course chat goes, I love your new jacket, it really suits you and sits well on your shoulders. You flagged this, it was hilarious, but you were one step ahead of Sam Altman, who just a few days later tackled this, and he kind of put his hands up, didn't he? And went, well, we know this is a bit of an issue. We are looking to fix it right now, but yeah, it's a problem.
Husk will be delighted with that. I mean, some of his views are already in the hundreds of thousands of millions, but would have done no harm. And he had a little wry grin on his face as well, Sam Altman. He wasn't hating it.
I disagree. I think
was he squirming?
I think he was squirming. Oh. I think the... Because he's been talking all week about how AI's got this marketing problem. He, you know, I think deep down it was probably killing him that his pride and joy, his product, his this thing that he's lived for years and years and years was just being absolutely ridiculed.
That it couldn't tell the difference between 7 seconds and 10 minutes. How fast did I run, chat? It took 10 minutes.
What? You get it. Right. No,
just can't.
Well, we played around with it last week. What language is this? Mm. And it just lies to you and hallucinates. So yeah, I don't think he loved it, but he's responded to it nonetheless. Interesting. Okay. Are you ready for a listener question?
Yes, very.
This is funnily enough, where we take one of our listeners' questions and you answer it.
Right.
Yeah. We have a fantastic prize for whoever gets their question asked on the show. Let's play it. That's right. You win yourself a brilliant T-shirt. And this week that is going to Els Bells in Margate. Loving the locations, firstly. Let me say that again.
Margate's nice, isn't it?
Els Bells, whoever has got that nickname. Great, love that. Fantastic. Yeah. Hello. Lovely. From Margate. Els Bells says, given the popularity of AI fruit Love Island.
Oh, no, not this again.
We talked about that last week, didn't we? And all this fruity slop on socials. Sounds wrong, that, doesn't it? How long until we see this slop move into normal television? Do you think it ever will?
Fruit Island, Fruit Love Islands, Islands of Fruit. I think it's popular because it's actually all right. But
I
think if on a sort of a sliding scale of slop, I actually think it's all right. But it is fast. It's a bit weird. People can meme with it, all that sort of stuff. It is effectively junk food when it comes to content. I don't think they've spent a huge amount on it, so it's quite cheap to make. The important thing is it's designed for the scroll. It's not really designed for the big screen in your living room. TV purists will come out and say, too low quality, too disposable, it's slop and rubbish, it won't come onto our screens. But I think there is, there's a little bit of tension here, and I think AI content is ridiculously cheap to make versus how we've always known traditional production. So if you're a broadcaster or you're a streamer, why on earth would you spend millions when you could probably test, I don't know, 50 different formats for pennies? Why would you wait months when you can just generate something overnight and multiple things and start testing them straight away? So I do think at some point someone's going to try it properly on TV, not because it's like the best thing that you've ever watched, but probably there's like an efficiency thing there, and why not? And I do think what might feel like slop today, like pretty quickly that can start to feel quite normal. And you think about when we first saw reality TV. I mean, I remember I worked at Channel 4 in that very first Big Brother, and that was a completely new format. I mean, it was like looked a bit of a shambles, just sort of people shouting and fighting and all the rest of it. That, you know, reality TV gradually became mainstream. Gogglebox, I think, is genius and it works, but effectively it's a fixed camera watching people comment on watching telly. It's sort of genius, but it's not the sort of high production value promise of sort of telly. It's recycled content. So I don't think we're going to see fruity AI Love Island on our televisions tomorrow, but I think there are going to be more experiments. I mean, we had the Serafina Valora girls who did the AI presenter on Channel 4 Dispatches. That didn't feel like it was very futuristic. That's just like that. That was just it. So I think more stuff of that's going to creep in. I think you're going to see more slightly odd new formats that we're not sure of. Something will work. Loads of people will copy it. So I just sort of answer the question, maybe not tomorrow, but I can see AI starting to creep in more and more and more, if not because it's brilliant, probably because it's saving a ton of money.
I think it's so interesting because, I mean, firstly, there is the counter argument that the worse things are getting as we scroll, like the cheaper, more simplified the content is getting in our feeds, the higher quality things are getting on the bigger screens, whether that is exceptional TV series that are costing, you know, new Harry Potter, for example, costing an absolute fortune to make of the highest quality, or whether that is like the cinema actually kind of delivering something which, you know, Project Hail Mary, everyone wants to see it right now. So there is an argument there that actually maybe as things get kind of cheaper and more sloppy on our scroll, you know, that the higher quality things stick out more on the big screen. But I do think back to your friend and brilliant guest on the show, Dr. Daniel Knapp, who kind of made this point where he kind of said pre-internet, you had high costs of production, but also high costs of consumption, whether that was you know, paying to go to the cinema or paying with your time to sit through a 3-minute ad break. It was like a level, fair playing field. Internet came in, production costs stayed high, consumption costs went down. You look at late night TV in America, which used to be so profitable. It's very costly to make. And you're looking at shows like Stephen Colbert that can't stay on the air anymore because they don't make the profit. The model's changed. And his point was maybe AI is going to rebalance things. And I think that's where it might get interesting, where, you know, maybe Fruity Love Island isn't going to be on at 9 p.m. on ITV1, but there will be a drama that is using AI special effects, or there will be a late night show and half the jokes have been written with a brilliant LLM. Yeah. Like, that's where I think it could get really interesting, where you get to that hybrid space where traditional media is embracing production tools to level those playing fields.
Yeah, and there'll be that sort of slightly, I don't like the phrase, but that sort of slightly messy bit in the middle where stuff is going to look a bit experimental and it is going to feel weird. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, Fruity Love Island isn't going to be on the telly tomorrow. We're going to start to see things creep in. I think that the whole concept of telly, I think, has changed though. You know, more and more people are watching YouTube on a TV versus they are a phone. Now, that could not have the same production values as the new Harry Potter, but still has got eyeballs and attention and all that kind of thing. I feel like I'm talking about Clay Splained every week, but that's AI. That feels like sort of Wallace and Gromity, and I watched those films on a television before there was even a sort of, before the iPhone existed. So I think there's going to be kind of lots of blurring, but yeah, I think some interesting formats to look out
for. Yeah, very interesting. And as Dr. Daniel said, you know, you've over the last few decades, you have lost jobs in that creative space as the models have shifted. AI might lead to more job losses, but it also might open up possibilities. You know, we might be able to keep releasing films in the cinema and keep traditional TV going because the way we make it has changed. So it's an interesting debate. I'm sure one that we often say will rumble on.
Yeah. Good question, though, Els Bells.
Yeah, thank you so much. Els Bells from Margate. Please keep these names coming. I love them.
You like knowing where people are.
It's just that makes me sound quite creepy.
And
I didn't mean it in a creepy way. What's that tool where you can search, like, we can track someone down? Pim Eyes. Els Bells, Margate.
Could you start sending your
postcode,
your
national insurance
survey,
number, yes,
and PIN code? That would be great. Just for George's curiosity,
for our patron. right, okay. I think on that note, we really should say goodbye before this podcast and me gets cancelled, as they say. Thank you for listening. If you have a weird AI story or a brilliant question you would like James to answer, do drop us an email at aihaven'taclue@gmail.com. As we've talked about, you can support the show on Patreon, keep up with the latest news with our free Substack. Do subscribe, do rate, and do share the podcast with a friend who might just want to know a little bit more about AI. Thanks to Team AI Haven't a Clue, Molly Carter, David May, and Alex. But we'll catch you next time. But for now, remember,
stay curious.